Hey, readers and writers. Before we launch into this episode, I wanted to give you the unfortunate news that our regular co-host, Jocelyn, will not be co-hosting in the immediate future due to a personal emergency. Don't worry, she's fine, and she hopes to be back after the new year. But in the meantime, we have a new format. Hey, readers and writers. Welcome to episode 116 of Read and Write. In case we haven't met before, I'm Deb, and today we're talking about finding new authors with our guest and my personal bestest friend, Jodi Hebel Hill. So Jodi's a reader, but she's also an artist, and she's really amazing. I love her. She has this watercolor series that I don't know how long she's been doing it. I don't know, forever. I think I own maybe 75% of this, or at least prints thereof. You can find her work on Instagram at The Artful Owl. Hi, Jodi.
Hi.
So tell me about your obsession with mushrooms.
Oh, gosh. I don't really have an answer for that. basically, the artwork speaks for itself. Right.
You know, we have these crazy mushrooms that grow like outside our big windows in the front. And the kids like to watch them grow. And I always think I'm going to take a picture for you because they're so like they get like they're like the roundy shape and then they go up to like the flat classic mushroom. Like,
ooh,
panhead, and I always want to take a picture, and then by the time I remember it, then they're already wilting and going.
Well, I'm always up for, like, receiving photos of mushrooms from people's yards.
I will try to remember to do it in the future. Like, I always look at, like, oh, wow, like, tomorrow, that's going to be a great show photo, and then I don't do it.
Yeah, they don't last long before they turn to goo, huh?
Yeah, but they're really awesome. They start like a ball, basically. They're like yellowy white, and they got like these little bumps on the outside of them. And then they just kind of get bigger and fan out. Yeah, it's totally your type of mushroom.
It sounds lovely. Visually appealing. I don't know the names of any of them.
So. So you like painting mushrooms, but you don't know what they are.
I like to use them as a metaphor. I like to, you know, make up mushrooms, but I don't follow them scientifically like I feel like I should.
How did the mushroom thing start?
My dad wanted me to do a series of paintings for him, and I had always liked painting figures and people and like animals and, you know, close-up sort of portrait style things, and I kind of shied away from doing anything landscape because it just wasn't appealing to me at the time. But then I kind of had to force myself to like a thing to paint it, if that makes any sense.
Okay.
So like in forcing myself to like the subject I was painting or, you know, become fascinated by the subject I was painting, I kind of got obsessed because he wanted like a series of three mushrooms that we had found in the yard, like small,
okay,
four inch by four inch paintings of these yard mushrooms.
Right.
And to humor him, I was like, okay, yes, fine, because it's family. So, so I painted these, but then I also fell into a rabbit hole of learning about mushrooms, like, obviously their scientific names, we covered that, but you know,
right,
their function, you know, in the ecosystem, and you know, just
have you watched that Netflix documentary, by the way?
Oh my gosh, that was so cool. Yeah.
We watched it and I thought, I bet Jodi's already watched this like three times.
Yep, probably.
So your dad started the mushrooms.
Yeah, and now I think he regrets it because I've painted so many years worth of like realist, you know, metaphor mushroom pictures.
I know, you have such like an artist catalog of mushrooms now. It's amazing. I was looking through your Instagram like, holy crap, this is awesome.
Yeah, I went off on a tangent. When I get obsessed with something, I really get obsessed with it. So.
I like the portraits with mushrooms on them.
Thanks. I think I plan to continue that and make it a series and do maybe some larger format in the same idea.
That's fun. So. Yeah, I think I have a
disapproval mushrooms. It's what I call them.
I have a wall devoted to your mushrooms now at this point. It's like the wall going down to the bedroom, like stairwell wall, but it's devoted to Jodi's mushrooms. I have like a dozen there now.
Nice. That's
awesome.
I appreciate yes. that. Yeah.
Besides all the other like art of yours I have in my house.
Hang my work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like when people actually hang my work in their house and I feel like really, it feels very rewarding.
Yeah. You should come to my house then. And segue, by the way, I haven't seen you in forever. Please come to my house. But also, I have a shit ton of your artwork in my house. I've got dog portraits. I have kid portraits. I have mushroom portraits. I would like the actual Jody sometime.
Yes, I will be there. Name the day.
All right. Should we shoot for like August 2026 or something?
Yeah. Give me about 10 years to plan. No, I'm just kidding.
I feel like I need 10 years to plan with two kids. Oh my God.
Well, in my collection of, reference images, my mom and I are doing walking all the trails at all the state parks in Pennsylvania. And I think that there's probably something, you know.
There are New York state trails near my house.
Close-ish, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure we can work that in. Segway.
We'll figure something out. You live too far away. That's the problem.
Yeah.
It's hard to pack all my junk, by junk, I mean family, into a car and then travel that long to see someone I like.
It is. It's hard to do. It's a long one.
It's actually, no, we just took the kids down to Maryland, so it wouldn't be as long as that, yeah. But yeah. Okay, let's move on. We're talking about finding new authors, how we do it. I guess that's it, how we do it, how we find new authors. How do you find new authors, Jody?
Well, lots of ways, actually.
Not to put you on the spot.
No, I was thinking about this in like preparation, and I was just very excited because there are a bunch of ways that I find new authors. And I almost don't know where to start first.
What's your favorite way to find a new author?
Well, my favorite is the serendipity of stumbling across something that just sounds appealing and reading it, you know, taking the chance and reading it and having it be awesome enough that you like read the rest of their work right away.
Oh, that's amazing.
But you know, that's serendipity. Mm. That happens a couple times here and there, right?
Right.
But not all the time.
I miss the days pre-COVID when I could like wander in Barnes and Nobles and just find an art. Like I'm a sucker for marketing. You know this about me.
Yes.
But so like book cover is marketing. And I like to just wander Barnes and Nobles and find something that looks appealing to me. And then I can just like, you can't take me to Barnes and Nobles anymore because I will spend 6 hours in that place. I'll just find them, then to like sit in the middle of the aisle and just start reading it. Like, nah, yeah, that looks good. Like add to my pile and then move on to the next one.
Some of that marketing is really good. Like they've done their job and it is what the cover feels like it should be. Like sometimes that really.
Yeah, sometimes that's nice. Like it just totally works out.
It's like it's labeled exactly what's inside. And I like that.
Mm-hmm. Or like the artist has done a good job of conveying the message of what the story was also trying to say. Like that's beautiful.
You can tell that they've actually read it or been given a really good summary.
Mm-hmm. Right. As opposed to the number of times I've been suckered in to buying a book and I'm like, this is nothing like what the cover promised me it would be. It's so annoyed about that. I have unread books in my house. It's not that they're bad books. I'm still too annoyed by the fact that the cover promised one thing and it turned out to be something else.
Yeah, that is disappointing. I think generally what I do in that case, I allow myself to be sucked in by the marketing, but then I take that step back and look at the reviews first, like the non-spoiler reviews. And I'm like, okay, uh-huh. Is this what this is selling itself as? Yeah. So.
Yeah, I love that Amazon's taken over my Barnes and Noble trips now. Like, I'll be browsing for a book on Amazon, and it'll start recommending stuff. Like, hey, you liked this book? Why don't you check out this book? I mean, their algorithm is clearly working. I'm buying so many books right now.
Yeah. Yeah, algorithms as a suggestion mechanism. You know, I'll take it. It makes me uncomfortable, but I'll take it. Sometimes they're good recommendations. I don't know. There are really a bunch of different ways. Like, so I'm on my library's, you know, Libby okay. app pretty right. often. And I think like accessibility and like ease of just getting something that's available, you know, you don't have to wait in line for it. You don't have to buy it. You don't have to, you just, it's available. You read the synopsis. It sounds okay. I've tried, like, if you have your mind open and you're like, you got to be willing to kiss some frogs, right?
Okay.
But eventually you'll get a good one. Or, you know, I've stumbled onto a bunch of different authors that I then read their entire catalog just because they had something that was available now on the Libby app and I was in between books.
Okay. Like who? Or what?
I don't know.
Tell me. Okay.
Oh, like River Solomon. Was it The Deep? And then I read Sorrowland. I just really love their way of presenting a story, their voice.
What kind of stories else? Are they? What genre do they fit into?
They write in across genres. They've okay. written a science fiction one. The Deep was like a mermaid sort of book, but it was, I don't know. I'm having trouble putting that into like an accurate description.
Okay. It was like a modern mermaid or like folktale?
Well, no, it was like a, I don't know if fantasy? I have the words to describe that one.
Okay.
Well, yeah, it's like a kind of like a folktale, but it was an expansion on a song by someone else, like a story. Ooh, that they based on a song that they took in the direction of like what happened to the ancestors of people who were being boated across the ocean to become slaves, but that were thrown overboard or threw themselves overboard, but then Ooh. lived on in the ocean. Like it was,
that sounds really interesting.
It was really amazing and really touching in like all sorts of deep ways. Mm-hmm. But I'm not doing it justice in describing it.
Okay.
And then they've written other ones. It's almost like a surrealist sort of, they all kind of deal with similar like journeys of, you know, painful suppression and things like that, but it's through different, almost different genres of storytelling. The first one I read was kind of sci-fi, like an arc ship kind of situation, but that had
I like levels sci-fi.
Levels of caste based on antebellum South.
Okay.
So like it was good, but it wasn't my favorite of the three that I've read by them. It was like the first or the second one I've read by them.
Which one did you like best out of the three?
Sorrowland, which was the last one. It's a relatively recent release, I think this summer sometime.
Okay. I'm going to have to check these out. The mermaid one sounds interesting. And I like that they write across genres. That's always interesting to me. That somebody can like kind of not exactly jump ship, but just like jump streams to tell different stories in different areas. I mean, I like that about people if they do that.
Yeah, it's really impressive.
That's one thing I miss about finding new authors. I can't like, I guess I could, but with two small kids, I don't like going out in the world these days that very much. I mean, mm-hmm. like, I can't like go to like the used book fairs or right. my favorite used bookstores. Like, I can't really just kind of do that wanderer kind of style of finding a new author if like I want to read. Right now, I'm just kind of like, I feel like I'm kind of like shooting in the dark sometimes. Like, the best I can do is read reviews on like Amazon and then find them, buy it somewhere. Like, I don't know. Not for someone who likes books as much as I do, I don't use the library that much. I should, but I just don't.
I love the library. Not going to the library physically, because even pre-pandemic, going places that I don't need to actually physically go is not something that I'm into. But
right,
going online and getting stuff on the from the library is amazing. Well, and a lot of times too, if I do find an author I love, it's then I purchase their books to support their work. Do you know what I mean? So yes. Like, it's a kind of a risk-free way to see if you really like them. And that's mm-hmm. what I like about it too.
Yeah, my sort of risk-free way of finding new authors is I find a book that I'm looking for, and then I look for it used. Like, I like say, like, I'm not willing to pay over $5 for this. Like, and then try it out. And then if I like them, yeah, I'll buy like the hardcover version things, because I like the physical books. Like, I'm not really into mm-hmm. digital books all that much. I mean, yeah, I have a shit ton of digital books, because like sometimes I just need something to read, and that's like the most immediate gratification for it. But I like filling up my house with books. Like, I like the physicality of having the book. That's why I like to go to bookstores, and that's why that's my favorite way to find new people.
Yeah. Smell of the book, the feel of the book. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the times too, I'll do both. Like, I'll have the physical book and have like the audio book. Because if I'm really into a book and I'm
you want to keep reading it no matter where you are.
I want to keep reading that book. Nothing's going to stop me. Thank you very much.
Doesn't matter if you're going for a walk or in the car, you're still going to read the book. Damn it.
That's right. So maybe one of my favorite ways is to read the suggestions of people like in my life. In the past 3 or 4 years, I've really increased the amount that I've been reading, and that makes me less trepidatious to try something that I might not like, because it's less precious.
Okay.
Because it's less precious. So like, it's less of a risk, because I'm not wasting, you know, I'm not wasting time. I know if I don't like it, I can finish it in a day or two. Right. And that, mm-hmm. that opens me up to trying more. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah.
So like with my husband, he and I will listen to an audiobook together, or we've even done like a thing where we choose a series, and he had vacation or something, and we like read the books to each other, kind of like, and
whoa,
it's
more awesome.
Like an experience. It's a shared experience. So even if I don't end up loving the author, or mm-hmm. it's something they chose, like something, it's a book he chose, or right. a series that he really, that really meant something to him. So not only do I get to explore a new book, but also have a shared experience with someone I care about, and get an insight into why they like a thing and things about their preferences and what they like, which I, you know, is pretty invaluable, even if you don't end up loving the book. And I've done that right. with
that's four or five really people. Awesome.
Yeah. And that's probably my favorite thing. Like, even book clubs are that to a degree. Right.
Right.
So uh-huh. like an example of an author that I found via a book club, and you'll know what I'm talking about here, would be Jeff Vandermeer. And so for book club, we read Annihilation, which mm-hmm. is the first book in the Southern Reach trilogy, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And
very familiar with this book, yeah.
In book club, while reading it, I was frustrated at the best of times with the book itself. And it's not that I thought it was bad, or, you know, not that
it
I had
slow.
Like
it was a slow book.
Weird opinions. I didn't have specific expectations from the author, because they were a new author to me. Mm-hmm. Right. So,
right.
But after reading it, that book stuck with me really intensely. So, and I also had this compulsion to finish series. So I I forced myself to finish the series. And then I find myself still like, this was what, 5 years ago, 6 years ago. I find myself still thinking about that series, even though it was frustrating at the time.
Because you paint mushrooms.
Well, and maybe that has some sort of influence as well into my obsession. But like, the book infected me with its spores, I guess. But like, but then I went on to read more from Jeff Vandermeer outside of that series.
Okay. And I haven't read anything else. I think I tried reading the second book in the series, and for whatever reason, I stopped.
Yeah.
So tell me, what else has he read or read? What else has he written?
Well, okay. More accessible, in my opinion, it's more straightforward, would be Born.
Okay. What's Born about?
B-O-R-N-E. Yeah.
I'm asking all the hard questions.
My summary skills are not what they could be. So just look it up and read the summary.
No, okay, fine. I'll just look it up and read the summary. Going on my phone right now, Jody.
It's science fiction in a kind of post-apocalyptic setting. And it's a survival story, sort of.
Okay.
But it's also a story about acceptance and maybe in a way how you react to something determines how that something reacts to you, sort of.
Okay,
would be an overarching idea. But there's that book, which is accessible, and then there's Dead Astronauts, which is in the same universe, I guess, but it's really kind of an experimental feeling format. Like when people say Jeff Vandermeer writes like weird science fiction, it Dead Astronauts falls into that category for me. Like it's very, it stretches your brain. But Born, I would definitely recommend as being accessible.
I just found it on Amazon.
I really, really like that one. I would recommend that one.
You know what's weird on Amazon sometimes? The hardcover is cheaper than the paperback.
I love it when that happens.
I know. It's kind of awesome. Okay, so I'm spending $11.44 on the hardcover version of Born.
Yay, you're taking my recommendation.
This is the worst. It's not actually bad, but this is one of the aggravating parts of having a podcast where you talk about books all the time is I keep adding more books to the books I want to read, and I barely have time to read as it is. So I just have this massive pile of books I just keep getting. Like the pile just keeps getting taller and taller and taller. I literally have a stack of books I haven't read yet because of this. My microphone right now is resting on some because I haven't got my arm yet.
Yeah,
the tragedy of being a podcaster who likes books. So how else do you like to find new authors?
I'm drawing a blank. I had other things. BookTube. I watch a lot and have watched a lot of BookTube.
Oh, yeah?
I don't know if you've ever... Yeah.
I always liked the idea of BookTube, but I've never actually gotten into it just because that's something I like to do when I'm doing something else. And you kind of need to be able to pay attention to that. So it doesn't mesh with me right now. Yeah. I need something on the background. And that's not a good thing for me to choose in the background.
Yeah, that's more of a focus than a background kind of thing, for sure.
Do you do a book talk?
Pardon?
Do you do book talk?
No, what's book talk?
The TikTok version of book.
Oh.
Book talk.
Okay, I know that we're relatively the same age, but I got to tell you, my soul feels too old for TikTok. I don't tweet. I don't tick. I don't talk. I barely Instagram.
So. Jody, you're like a year younger than I am. You're supposed to be.
Hit. I know. But you've always been more tech savvy than me. So it's not that I can't. It's just that I'm too busy reading. I'm too busy reading to actually like learn a new thing or like get on social media. Yeah.
Part of me says that sounds so snobby, but I completely agree. Well, I just got done saying I don't have time to read. I would like to be reading rather than doing social media.
Well, you know, I'm lying that it's not that I don't have time because I'm spending all that time watching BookTube. So, you know, I'm being facetious, right? There are people like, I think a lot of people think that maybe if they haven't checked out BookTube, think that it's, they get recommended certain people who talk about, you know, surface Instagrammy kind of things, but there are lots of layers to BookTube. And I think there are a couple of creators who are really good at talking about what a book is outside of what their opinion of it is. And I really appreciate them because it's from them that I can get a good idea of whether or not maybe the book would be for me outside of just a review. Right.
Right.
And that's, I appreciate that.
Yeah. I feel like that would just make me want to buy more books.
Well, and it does that.
I have a problem. Yeah. We all have problems here on this podcast, and those problems are books.
Well, yeah, I might need to add more floor support in my basement. You know, just
saying. Yeah, I know the listeners like can't see it. No, I can see your background. Your books literally go up to the ceiling. I don't know how you reach them. Do you have a ladder? Do you have like an old time Victorian ladder?
I have a cool
ladder. Oh my God, you totally have a ladder. Yeah, of course you do. No, literally, I can see the books touching your ceiling. Like, I understand you need more floor support.
It's a problem.
It is a problem. Mine are just scattered throughout the house, like on bookshelves and piles, like. If I didn't make the kids pick everything up, you'd be tripping over them. My books are just scattered and like
my dogs are jerks, but you know.
I'm like a little mouse book hoarder. There's just piles of books everywhere, like secreted away in areas.
If you spread them out, it doesn't look like quite as much, I think, right? Are you tricking yourself mentally?
Maybe. Although we have recently run out of bookshelf space. So now the books are being piled on top of books and in front of books. So I have to do something to remedy the situation because while I really like the look of a really like jam-packed bookshelf, that is actually starting to physically become a problem.
Yeah, functionally, I can see how that would be difficult for sure.
And then every once in a while, I'll be looking for a book and I'm thinking, I know I own it, but where is it? Like, there's so many, and I'm so disorganized with my book, filing structure. I know I own this book, but I cannot locate it in my house. It's here somewhere. I just don't know what room and what shelf. I mean, if I was really anal, I'd keep like a, you know, that we had a book app for a while that I actually tried to keep track of all the books. I don't remember the name of it anymore. I'll have to look it up and put it in the show notes. My brain just keeps wanting to say Libby, and I know it's not Libby but you just said Libby. So Libby is now in my brain, but like you could like scan the code in all your books. It would keep track of what books you own.
Oh,
so I wouldn't have to buy
it on Goodreads too, right?
Yeah.
Like keep track of whether or not you own it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't.
But it just doesn't tell me physically where in my house the books are.
Oh.
Like, I wish, like, each book came like an air tag or something so I could see where it was in the house. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm that annoying person who goes in someplace and looks for, like, the color of the spine. I won't actually ask someone who works in a bookstore for a book based on the color of the spine because I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to make their day bad, but like that's how I look for books.
Okay.
So that's how I like, have mine organized.
You look at your shelf like, oh, I need another black book. So I'm going to go to the store and find one that has a black spine.
No. I think, oh, I really would like to reread Suspicious Minds. And I'm thinking, okay, that's yellow. So I know where it is.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. I thought you actually were saying like you actually go out and purchase a book to complete your color collection.
No, no, I don't buy it based on the color of the spine. I just organize it based on the fact that I remember it by the color of the spine.
Hmm. That's better than absolutely no organization at all like mine.
Yeah.
And now we've got kids' books. Like the kids are moving out of some of their baby books. So some of the baby books are going into the house collection. So I've got like really graphic adult books next to like the going to bed book.
Oh,
or like
gosh.
Daddy kisses or something. I mean, it's a really juxtaposition of my life.
Yeah, I've been meaning to like, well, since they were small, I've been meaning to send books, like two of like the books that were my favorite when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But one of them is like a Peter Spire book or Spire. And it's like out of print. And it's like, you know, 85 bucks on eBay. I'm like, well, I want
them
to
read
it, but I also don't want them to read it that badly.
Right.
But it's called, if you ever see it, it's called Oh, Were They Ever Happy.
But you're going to go check and see if you have it now.
It's right behind me somewhere here. Oh, Were They Ever Happy?
Okay.
By Peter Spier. And it's basically about kids whose parents, like a family of like three or four kids whose parents and a dog, whose parents go away for the day and they find all this house paint in the garage and they decide that it's a good idea to like paint their parents' house. And it would be a nice thing to do. And I just loved all the illustrations. Like,
it sounds like a sweet kid's book, but as a parent, I would be horrified.
Right. Well, and that's another reason that I haven't like gotten on and sent it to you, because I'm like, well, if it gave them ideas and they painted some, but like, it's one of the things that made me want to paint, I think, as a kid, like, it's just colorful and fun and interesting.
Right.
And then the other one just has really fun language and long and interesting words, but that are fun to say when you're a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Beastly Rhymes, Jack Hanrahan and Phil Hahn.
Okay.
So if you ever see any of those, like on thrift books or whatever,
okay,
I recommend them for kids.
I will add them to the show notes and then also to my own personal notes.
They might be, I'm not sure age-wise where they fall, because, you know, I don't have kids. But
they might be a little old for them, but it won't be for long.
Sorry, I was looking at.
Oh, my goodness. No, I started, I'm trying to introduce my kids to new authors because my oldest is just starting to read. But her version, she's still very like pink, princess, purple, you know, like that's just what she is right now. So I feel like I have to find stories that kind of touch on that so she'll be interested, but then also steer her away and give her a new outlook on something that she wouldn't otherwise experience. And that's always tough. So
yeah, finding a window in through their own interests is, is challenging.
I did manage to do it a little bit with The Labyrinth and because of the sparkly ball gown that
oh,
got
yeah.
her attention.
and the bubbles.
Yeah. And I started reading her The Last Unicorn, like one of my own personal favorites. But that is still too old for her, I discovered, because she just didn't have the attention span to remember like basically one day to the next. What was going on? The chapters are long. Like I couldn't read a whole chapter for bedtime.
Oh yeah.
So I look forward to my kids learning to read. Like I look forward to sharing all these magical worlds I have in my bookshelves with them. And hopefully they don't like things like murder mystery or something that I have nothing to share.
It's fun to see stuff through their, you know, their joy and discovery of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think, where else do I discover new authors? Like, the podcast has kind of become how I discover new authors when I can't go do my weird bohemian wander style of buying new books.
Well, so another way that I discover new authors is kind of a conglomeration of the two things that we've already touched on, which is Goodreads, I know, owned by Amazon, right? But also has your friends on it if you're lucky, right? Mm-hmm. So not only do you get their algorithm, you know, suggesting books based on what you're clicking on, but you get to see what your friends are reading. And
in theory,
find out. Yeah.
Like, unless you have friends like me who don't actually update their Goodreads unless it's on their Kindle automatically. Because I don't have time for that right now. You see all my Kindle Goodreads. But meanwhile, I feel like I'm getting updates from you like every day. Hey, from Goodreads. Hey, look what Jody's reading. And I'm like, okay. Yeah.
Last year, I was really hoping that people just unsubscribed from the email updates because I was reading like literally a book a day and as a coping mechanism. And like, I was like, I need to keep track of this. So I really hope all my friends have like unsubscribed from the daily email because this is going to get annoying. So
I definitely have not unsubscribed. I get emails on a regular basis about what Becky is reading and what Jody is reading. You two are very voracious readers.
Oh gosh. Well, you know, that's one of the ways that I found so many new authors that I really enjoy just by reading so much. But I know just it's like a scattershot, you know, if you're stoking that curiosity and like have multiple tabs open, you know, like metaphorically speaking.
Right.
Then you're getting loads of input and you don't have to filter it because you can take it all in, at least for a short period of time. It's not, I don't think it's probably healthy to do that for long, long stretches of time. But that was my recent last couple of years. And I think it really did opened up my taste preferences even. Like, you know, I don't think I would have ever, in your knowing me, in the time that you've known me, read a romance novel. However, based on suggestions from, you know, all the things that we've mentioned and the confluence of those suggestions and the, you know, the books that overlapped in all of those, I found a few that actually appealed to me and had decent storylines and three-dimensional characters and,
oh wow,
you know, I mean,
holy hell, that sounds like the Holy Grail. I still haven't found, I mean, admittedly, I had to stop reading romances, but to date, I still have not found a romance that met all my criteria.
Oh, God. Do you have a lot of criteria?
No, I just, well, I like it to be historical because I'm that person.
Okay.
And it can't be a complete like bodice ripper. I need something else to keep me like engaged with the characters other than just sex.
So what else? You need something other than just the romance in a historical romance.
Yes. For you to like I need something like for a while I had sort of found it in like the Gail Carriger ones where it's like a steampunk Victorian kind of romance, but also had like this sort of urban fantasy aspect to it because I think there were werewolves involved at one point or something. But I couldn't keep up with it. It got to be too much. I mean, she does good work, but I don't know. It still didn't quite hit all my spots. I don't know. I don't know what my criteria is for a good romance yet. I haven't
found
it
when you see it.
Yeah, exactly. It's like my brother told me while we were camping, like he doesn't know what his criteria is for a 10 out of 10 cookie, but he'll know it when he eats it. And that's kind of how I feel about with a romance. I'm not sure what my criteria is yet, but I know it when I'll read it, except that I've had to stop reading it because it did bad things to my brain. Well, it did bad things to my relationship.
Oh,
I kept
no.
looking at my husband and going, why don't you do this? So I had to stop.
For the health
of my relationship, I had to stop reading romances.
I just use that as like a palate cleanser in between reading really serious nonfiction.
I could see that.
Like, and I like, so far what I've tried, I like more contemporary kind of modern sort of interpretations. Like The Brown Sisters, the trilogy by Talia Hibbert.
I'm not familiar with it. Those. I think we read different genres.
Yeah, I don't know that I don't know that it would fall into your interests as a
romance. Like strictly science fiction and low fantasy reader. That's just kind of the niche I stay in because that's what I enjoy. I guess I'm not adventurous. I don't really go outside that niche very much.
Well, and I used to be just into like classics. And then at the complete other end of the spectrum, like horror and thriller. And that was my two things that I did.
Right.
But, and sometimes, you know, some literary fiction here and there. Right. Mm-hmm. But really, really in finding different authors and trying things from the library that were just available, I've really opened up the genres that I'm willing to read. And my husband's really into like sci-fi and fantasy. And while he still hasn't convinced me to start on any of his like 17 book series where each book is 750 pages, and you know, I can't commit to that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do like some fantasy, and I do like low fantasy, like, you know, what you're talking about. I do enjoy some of that.
Yeah, I'm not really a high fantasy person. Like, I don't necessarily want to read about, like using Tolkien as an example. I mean, yes, he did good work, and it is a good series, but I don't necessarily want to read that kind of book all the time. Like, that's too high fantasy for me. I like, my favorite type of fantasy is the kind I'm currently writing. It's, like, magic in the real world.
Yeah.
That is my ideal type of book, is that low fantasy model.
Yeah.
And also science fiction. I love science fiction.
Yeah. Well, I saw that you tried the first Murderbot book.
I love the Murderbot books.
What did you think of that?
I love them. I love them so much. I read them like whenever a new one comes out, I immediately get it and I read it.
Maintained a friendship if you didn't like Murderbot.
You didn't think we'd be friends if I didn't like Murderbot? Oh my God.
No, I'm kidding.
It's a good thing. I love Murderbot. Murderbot is, I don't know. It's shot up there to like some of my favorite science fiction books. Like, it's up there with The Expanse for me. And I love The Expanse series. It's just, I love it. It's so good. I love seeing the world from, I love it so much. I'm going on a tangent about it. I love seeing the world through like a robot's eyes. Like, it's such a unique perspective.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I love it.
Like, you're looking at humanity through a non-human's eyes, but close enough that they're trying to identify with it, but also knowing they're separate. I'm sorry. I really enjoy the Murderbot series at 150%.
Well, and not only are you getting that great perspective that forces you to think differently about not only artificial intelligence, but how we treat people now, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you're also, I don't know, I lost my thought mid-train.
Well, you're also seeing the perspective of humanity just through a non-human's eyes. Like, it's just, I love it's Martha Wells, right? I love
that. Yeah, Martha Wells.
Yeah, I love I don't know how she sees this. Like, I feel like this is, like, sometimes, like, the Murderbot will do something. I'm like, whoa. Like, like it opened up a new way of seeing things that I hadn't thought of before. And oh my God, kudos to Martha for doing that, for thinking that first.
For having the ability to put herself into that perspective is really
exactly
cool.
Yeah. And like Murderbot's best friend is a ship. I mean, that's yeah. great.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
I know.
And the ship is such a stack. And I love
yeah.
it.
Yeah. The ship is such an a-hole. But yeah. they're friends and it works. And my only Snarky complaint is AI. They're so damn short. I wish they're like every time I'm done with a book, I'm done with one of the stories, I'm like, wait. No, just come. Wait, no, this is only halfway through the story. Like, I get so annoyed that I feel like it's not done yet.
I think, and here's the thing, like, I can identify with thinking the same thing, but there's one that's full, like a full length novel. Like, they're all novellas except for one. And the full length novel had, in my opinion, some issues with the pace. So I almost think that after reading the full length novel, she went back to the novella format. And mm-hmm. I think that one's either coming out or just came out. At any rate, I think it works better as a novella.
I don't know. I enjoy Murderbot's interactions so much that I just want them to keep continuing. The network Sorry. Effect. Is that the first one?
Network Effect is the full length novel.
Was that the first one in the series?
No, I think it's
Was that the one? Second one?
1, 2, 3, 4. I think it's the fifth one.
Fifth one. Oh my God. Okay. Yeah, I read them like as like I got the first one kind of on a whim and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. And I immediately bought all the rest. And then I read all the rest immediately. Like there was no pause.
Yeah.
And then I saw, like, she just, what she just released? Was it another novella or was it just a short story? I haven't gotten that one yet, but it's on my list of things I must do.
I think it was another novella.
Well, I 100% need to read this. And I'm so overworked right now. I just have so much on my plate. I haven't been able to do anything. Like, today I got 10 minutes to start a movie, and that's all I had. Was 10 minutes to eat my lunch and start a movie. Like, I just don't have, I physically don't have the time right now. But it is on my list. I have to read this new Murderbot.
Fugitive Telemetry came out April 27th. And that's Murderbot like Diaries number 6.
No, I feel like I just got an email like within the last couple of weeks that she just released something new.
Oh, did she? Am I behind?
I don't know if it was like a regular like novella or if it was just a short story.
Okay.
This is completely devolved now. We're no longer talking about how to find new authors. We're just talking about Murderbot and how amazing it is. If you haven't read Murderbot, I suggest you give it a try. Because even if you don't like science fiction, it has a lot of different aspects. I feel like a lot of people should enjoy or would enjoy. And besides, I love it, so you should read it. There, that's the end of the sentence.
Habitat, range, niche, territory. Short stories.
Short story. Okay. Ugh, it's like a little tiny appetizer before you get a plate of something else.
Murderbot 4.5. I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm just looking on Goodreads to satisfy my own curiosity. So,
yeah, I really enjoy Murderbot.
That was one that I found from a YouTube suggestion.
Oh, really? That was an Amazon algorithm for me.
Well, and based on your reading, it would suggest that for you. But based on my reading, it wouldn't have suggested that for me.
Right.
So that's why I'm glad that I have multiple avenues of suggestions.
That's true.
Right.
Oh, Murderbot.
It's so delicious. Well,
I know,
and
it is.
No, I can't stop talking about Murderbot. But like I've read them all physically, and I've also listened to all of the audiobooks like 3 times through.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's really a favorite. I don't know what that says about me.
I haven't listened to any of the audiobooks. I've only have them on my Kindle. That was a like I said, that was an Amazon algorithm for me, and that was I just needed something new to read because I don't remember what I was reading, but whatever I was reading, it just wasn't meshing with, like, I just didn't like it right then. Like, I don't remember what it was, but I was like, I needed something new right then. And Amazon had kept recommending it to me, but I kept putting it off because I didn't like the cover. So I finally was like, fine, I'll try it. And I read the sample and I was like, hell yes. Download the rest of the book and then immediately get the rest of the other ones too.
Yeah.
And can I just talk for a second about how annoying the Amazon sample is for Kindle?
Yeah.
Because if it's a short book, if there's not many pages to it, then I've actually had this happen that I haven't gotten to read any of the book because the title of contents, the copyright, all that stuff takes up the 5%.
Oh, you're kidding.
I don't remember what it was. I remember being really pissed off about it, that the entire sample was all of that. Like, I didn't actually get to the end of the other content. It must have been very short.
Well, they just shot themselves in the foot then, didn't they?
Seriously, because I didn't go and buy it, clearly. I don't remember. I clearly deleted it because I was so pissed off, but... Yeah, that's definitely happened. And it also, the ones that have happened where you like get three pages and you're just like, what? This, I don't care about the table of contents. Give me the 5% of the story.
Like, how is that a sample? Right.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't read samples. And I think it's got something to do with the fact that if I start a book, I'm going to finish it. Like, I know a lot of people can get into a book and be like, this isn't for me, and I'm going to put it down, or like read a sample chapter and like decide not to read a book. I still can't do that.
I can do that. I usually I'm the classic reader where I'll decide in the first chapter whether I want to read it or not. And if they can give me at least part of that first chapter, I can make that decision more easily. It might be them shooting themselves in the foot, to use your phrase, that then I just don't buy the book because I don't like it. And before, I probably would have bought it out of like curiosity because I like the cover or something. I have definitely read a lot of mediocre books that way, though, trying to find a good author and then just seeing the cover and being like, well, that looks like a neat, interesting cover. And the blurb looks nice. And then you get it home, and you're like, oh, this is okay. What's really disappointing is then, like, especially if it's like the first, or it's meant to be the first in a series, and then I don't know if I just can't find it, but that's as far as it goes. Like, you don't read any more after that. That's always really disappointing. I've had a couple of those. I don't know if like it's just publishing woes, the author didn't finish it. There's a couple I'm actually really sad about. I think one was like North Star. It was like a steampunk low fantasy thing. It was really interesting. Like the main character was like a teenage girl. It probably was like a YA or something. I was reading a lot of YA at this point in my life. And she got like the stone stuck in the palm of her hand. No, native stone. I will have to look this up and put it in the show notes. But like, it was like cold, and like she had like basically this unharnessed cold magic in her hand or something. And she had to like go from the country and get to the city and go to someone who could help her. And then like the book just stopped. Like, it was just, it was clearly meant to be a series. And either I just couldn't find it anymore after that, and I just stopped looking after a while, or the author didn't finish. And that's so disappointing when that happens. Well, you know, now that I've said this, I'm going to go look it up on Amazon to put it in the show notes and find out it's like a 6-book series and I just missed it all.
Yeah, they're like 14 books and 7
on the way. I'm here giving them crap on the podcast because I couldn't find the other book because I didn't look hard enough. I don't know.
Oh, gosh. Well, after my husband made me read the George R. R. Martin series, and didn't tell me that it wasn't finished, like a finished series before we started reading it. I will no longer start a series that is not finished. That is like, I have very few rules about what I will and will not read, but it takes quite a bit to talk me into starting a series that hasn't already been finished.
Are you still pissed off about it? Like 99% of the world?
No, I'm not pissed. And I understand the amount of pressure that can be put on someone to like finish a thing. And that's really not helpful to the creative process. Like I totally get that. And I'm not like sitting here cursing him. I'm cursing myself for not checking to see if it was finished before I started reading it.
Before you got invested in the characters. Now, have you read them all or did you stop? And so I just like
cold turkey
until it's done.
All the ones that are out, I read. That was one of the ones that we read to each other.
Okay. That's really awesome. I'm not sure if I would like to do that with my husband.
It's not something that I think I would recommend to everyone, but it worked for us a couple of times. It was fun. Now we're listening to the Dresden Files in order. Like he picked that as a together audiobook. We're not reading that to each other. We're listening to it.
That sounds fun. I think I read the first book and I watched that series. It had like one series. I definitely watched that one series.
Yeah, we watched some of that together, I think, a while ago.
It gave a nice visual to the characters, but then I don't think the series actually conformed all that well to the books. Because I think I watched the series first and then tried to read the books. And then I think I was like, wait, what? No, this isn't how I thought it was. So I think I ended up getting confused and not finishing it.
Yeah, I think that the series had more of a, what, noir detective kind of comedy feeling. And the book series is less of that and more of full-on
fantasy. It takes itself much more seriously, yeah.
Well, I mean, there's still a sense of humor in it, and it's sort of similar, but it's just not... The rest of the context for it is not quite the same. I think if they did that, and it would have been expensive to make, like back when that series was made, to make it like the books. I think if it was made now, it might be a little different, but they'd have to update some of like the character opinions and things, because some of that's pretty heavy-handedly outdated. I mean, but Jim Butcher is still writing these, right? So like, I don't know how it evolves over time. We're only on number 7, and you know, that was written like something 90s, teen years ago.
I feel like it was like, I don't know, late 80s, 90s maybe it got started. I don't quote me on it, but
yeah, so you know, a while ago. I don't know how his writing or his opinions have evolved, so there's a lot of like over the top chivalry that I find irritating. Part of the main character's inner monologue about how awesome he is about protecting women and stuff. It's kind of exhausting, but like if you look beyond that, I mean, it has redeeming qualities and it's entertaining. So I don't need everything to be perfect, right? For it to be entertaining.
No, I guess not. In a perfect world, yes, but that's a perfect world. Yeah. I was using the word perfect too many times.
It depends what I'm looking for. I need my nonfiction to be perfect. I need my nonfiction to be flawless. But when I'm just looking to be entertained, you know.
If your nonfiction wasn't perfect and flawless, it would be fiction.
That's right. Thank you for explaining my joke.
Wait, that was a joke and I didn't get it, and I then explained it back to you. Oh my god. Man, I am overworked. I need a vacation. Oh my god. Okay. On that note, maybe we should wrap this up. Clearly my brain is going and I need some time to myself or vacation or two. Okay. So what do you think, readers and writers? How do you find new authors? Let me know on Twitter at RNW Podcast or on Instagram, Read and Write Podcast. If you're interested in anything we mentioned, you can find it in the show notes on readandwritepodcast.com. And don't forget, you can find Jody on Instagram at The Artful Owl. Join me next Wednesday when we're going to talk to Daniel Jackson about being a first-time writer. Until then, keep reading, keep writing, and go do what you do best. You got this. And that's it. Thank you for listening to the show. If you like what you're hearing, make sure to rate Read and Write on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. If you have a suggestion for a future episode, drop me a line. I'm always open to suggestions. Also, did you know that Read and Write publishes 3 episodes a week? Check out the podcast's YouTube channel for Write With Me Mondays live streams and 30-second book reviews on Fridays.